Welcome to the Sacred Body Podcast, where we explore the embodiment of belonging and the journey to get there. The topics we'll focus on primarily are food, birth, sex, and boundaries. And I'm your host, Stacey Ramsauer. Thank you for joining us on the Sacred Body Podcast. Today, I am very pleased to speak with Maggie Flood, who is a licensed acupuncturist, as well as a sexological body worker operating out of Southern California. And Maggie and I know each other through the wonderful world of social media, overlap of interests and work in the world. Maggie, as I understand it, your business name is Sacral Spaces. Is that correct?
Correct.
Sacral Spaces, and there is an emphasis on reproductive and sexual health, as well as trauma resolution. So I'm really thrilled to have this conversation with you today, specifically regarding the role that sexuality plays in female reproductive health. And I would love to know, from the small pieces that I've seen that you've shared, you have quite a circuitous journey and have experienced so much yourself coming to the work that you offer. And so if you would please just share a bit with us about how you came to be Maggie Flood of Sacral Spaces.
Sure, yeah. I started, I guess we could go way back to being young and having a significant amount of developmental trauma, carrying, and physical trauma, carrying through my young adulthood, mm-hmm. and then, you know, ending in some really bad sexual interactions and a significant rape in college, which landed me in a lot of pelvic pain, to be mm-hmm. honest. And I was, I had a lot of pretty serious diagnoses, you know, pelvic inflammatory disease, cervical dysplasia. I had all kinds of pain that was pretty debilitating, to be honest. And so then when I was 22, I finally made my way to a surgeon who diagnosed me with endometriosis after a laparoscopy. So that's the short version of my story. And for anyone who doesn't know, endometriosis is a disease/condition where the lining of the uterine, where the uterine tissue or something that represents and resembles uterine tissue, endometrial tissue, grows outside of the uterus. It causes a lot of adhesions, causes a lot of pain for some women. And I was diagnosed with this, and a lot of that tissue was surgically removed. And I went to pelvic floor PT. And that was really the beginning of my awareness that I was holding a lot of that trauma in my pelvic floor. Mm-hmm. I had a particular experience with a pelvic floor PT who, while she was down there, kind of caused this lump to rise to my throat, and I started to cry, and I had a very intense experience seeing memories of my childhood, mm-hmm. seeing and feeling these violations throughout my young adult sexual life. And I started to wonder if this was something that I could help affect in other women. Of course, then going down the road, I went to acupuncture school, which didn't seem to be leading me towards that direction, but which actually happened to give me a really solid background in yin-yang duality and the Taoism in medicine. And I'm really appreciative to bring that into my work. Eventually became a sexological body worker. And now I'm kind of combining these two things to kind of do a whole body healing and mm-hmm. a whole body approach to what happened to you. What is your story? How can we get past this? And yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
The short and sweet of it. I'm really glad that we have time to flesh it out because there's so many entry points there. But thank you. Thank you for that. And thank you for being transparent with your process and your journey. I'm curious, well, one thing that I want to acknowledge is what seems to me like such an incredible background for you to be bringing to trauma resolution for people, which is this Chinese medicine understanding. It's similar in Ayurveda, but a little different. Mm-hmm. Understanding of the emotional correlation with organ systems. And of course, that's a huge deal when you're working with mm-hmm. reproductive organs, and being able to, you speak a lot about this in the way you share, which I greatly appreciate, is all these organ systems work in tandem. They're communicating with one another all the time. Nothing exists in a vacuum. And in the Ayurvedic system, the reproductive organs, the reproductive tissue, that's sort of where all these other systems are funneling. So It's like if there is an imbalance expressed here in the uterus or the ovaries, it's systemic, right? There really is like a whole person impacted by whatever trauma or dis-ease or disorientation was the origin. So if you want to take that and run with it, great. If you can apply some of that to also the work of sexological body work, because for a lot of people that might not be something that they've heard of before.
Sure, yeah. So starting with the acupuncture medicine, Chinese medicine, what's really interesting and what fascinates me, and this is what I like to bring into my work a lot, because the Western medical model as we know it does see certain parts of the body as existing as a machine or in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. And when I started my journey through all of this, I realized so deeply already, even before going back to school and becoming an acupuncturist, was that I was noticing symptoms throughout my body. There was not just one pelvic floor issue. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just a muscle that was tight. It wasn't just some scar tissue. It wasn't just, you know, it wasn't even just some emotions that happened to lodge themselves somewhere, you know, in some, you know, ethereal ideal of what the body is. It really was a whole system. It was a whole system that felt down and oppressed and not working. And when a lot of people, when they come to see me, it's funny because I don't necessarily jump to doing any of the scar tissue remediation work. I don't necessarily jump into, let's, you know, do sexological body work, get you, you know, integrated with your pelvic floor, because sometimes it really requires controlling the branch before you can get to the root. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes, you know, while we want to affect the root more than anything of the condition, the branch is what's screaming and causing that delayed process. And So for so many women, it causes, for so many women, there are other things that need to be approached first. And very often, their mental, emotional, having to do with different organ systems that seem to have nothing to do with the pelvic floor. So I suppose the reason that I love this system so much is because it really is an approach that helps us understand that there's no one part, and that there's no one part to hate, there's no one part to love, and that once you affect something, everything else shifts. Mm-hmm. I think that that's the beauty of bringing the acupuncture and this Taoist medicine into a practice like sexological body work, because, you know, if we were only to focus on sexuality, or if we were to only focus on our pelvic pain, then, you know, we might not heal at all. And I do see and hear a lot of women that come to me saying, I've been through pelvic floor PT so many times, so many rounds. I've been to my gynecologist. I've done all this other work. I've even done a lot of emotional work. What's going on with me? And it's like, well, we need to put it all out on the table and create a story here and understand exactly what's going on in so many different ways. And you'd be surprised that a lot of people come in talking about the way that they were birthed after a while, so many sessions, or this one particular incident that they just have lodged in their memory, and they don't know why it's affecting them so much. And, you know, these are the little things that we have to pick apart. And I really like doing that with this yin yang model, because it really simplifies everything. And it really brings us to this very simple idea of how do we view everything as tying into itself and into each other. Mm-hmm. And so, and the other cool thing about acupuncture and the channels in particular is that a lot of them, the major ones that run in the leg, they all not in the pelvic floor. And so this is what's really cool about what you mentioned about Ayurveda being the center, the pelvic bowl being the center of everything, because I do believe that that's where we hold our jing in Chinese medicine. That's where we hold our DNA, everything that we have to offer the world, everything that we come in with is basically stored and kept and nurtured there. So it's a really, it's a really interesting process to look at it that way. And I think as it ties into sexological body work, we can, you know, we can work on our emotional patterns as we work on the physiological patterns. And I think they both really work in tandem very well together.
And the, you know, I appreciated you saying something to the effect of, if we only focus on sexuality, and when you say that, I hear, I think what you mean, it's sort of like this general cultural understanding of sexuality, which, like the organ systems even, is separated or parceled out from all the other aspects of our being. And when I lead programs on somatic sex education or sexuality, it's like, we don't actually talk about sex all that much. Because it is almost like the pelvic floor, like the uterus. It's like the culmination of all these other systems. It's like, this will express itself when these other channels are clear. There will be clarity here. There will be function here. And it won't have to be something that we approach like a mathematical equation.
Mm-hmm. And to be honest, sexuality, as we see it in the societal terms, you know, when we talk about sex, we think about this particular type of sexuality.
Yes.
A lot of it, when you see a problem sexually, you know, low libido, inability to hold this arousal, all of these things are, most of these things are kind of branch issues.
And I love that image.
That's what kind of is a little silly about it, if you think about it, because it's such a profound thing in our lives, yet it ends up being such a branch issue to something else usually. Mm-hmm. It is interesting. And as it relates to reproductive health, you know, you can't have sex and sexuality be separate from reproductive health and vice versa, because if we, you know, I hear a lot of women, for instance, let's say, you know, they say, well, I don't need to understand my fertility because I'm on the pill, and the pill is keeping me from getting pregnant. I don't really ever want to get pregnant, so I don't really have to worry about my reproductive health. Well, if you're having trouble sexually, you do need to worry about that, or not worry, but you need to address it. And if you have reproductive problems, maybe your sexuality is something that needs to be addressed too. Like your feelings of shame around that, your feelings of, you know, your history with that. So
there was something shared recently, and I don't know if it started with you, but it's, you know, we have these people in our constellation. It's like, oh, you're sharing that post, you're sharing that post. It was something about our fear of pregnancy is keeping us from something. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I'd love to hear you know what I'm talking about.
I think I saw that too. It's something about fear of pregnancy being it's a reason we're shutting down our reproductive systems or
yes.
Something like that. Yeah. So I think it was a fertility awareness person who posted it. I cannot be quite sure, but I've seen it around a couple times too. And it's really, I think, talking a lot about birth control, which I have very specific opinions about, very controversial opinions, to be honest, because I'm not completely for birth control, and I actually think that it's doing us a huge disservice.
Yeah.
When I say birth control, I mean hormonal birth control in particular.
Right.
But yeah, it does disconnect you from your body physiologically. It shuts down a system that's very important for health and immunity. And, you know, it's a love hate because you really can't say, you know, you shouldn't be doing this or this is really bad for you without catching a lot of flack from people
totally.
Who are like, you know, you're anti-feminist. No, I'm not. I'm just trying to tell you how this is affecting your body, because they think that if you don't know what you're putting in your body, then you're going to cause yourself more issues down the road.
Right. And it, I think, speaks to this underlying issue of the fact that so much of our healthcare model is about putting the outcomes in someone else's hands, putting the responsibility for the education on someone else, and taking the information we get at face value. This is the safest method on the market. Okay, well, based on what? It's not gonna give me horns growing out of my face. Like, that means it's safe.
Yeah.
Because really, when you, at this stage in the game, there has been a significant amount of time that hormonal birth control has been very widely used, and the effects are known. And the effects are depression, infertility, low immunity, autoimmune disorder. I mean, it's a crazy list.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm with you on this side of the fence of having strong opinions about hormonal birth control, but I think it's my primary issue is that underneath that is this fact that we're not, it's like giving us an out to having to tune in to our actual needs and wants and boundaries and have conversations that may be uncomfortable that could really clarify, is this a safe relationship? Is this the dynamic I want to be in? Is this the life path I choose, really?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I think it's an important conversation, and I'm happy to put a microphone up to your controversial opinions.
And when we talk, I mean, and I think perhaps my issue that I take with it is both personal and intellectual, in a sense that if we really think about it, you know, personally, when I was on the pill for over 10 years and my body was telling me to come off of it, and really that's a good portion of my endometriosis pain cleared when that happened. And so part of my practice is helping people come off the pill, which is also a controversial practice for
totally.
Whatever reason right now. And but then intellectually too, you know, as I'm somebody who really values root medicine, root cause issue, you know, attention to the root, I think that when we really take a deep look at it, we're not taught in the society how valuable it is to create boundaries and consent from our bodies. And then from there, we end up making decisions that are told to us. We end up making decisions based on what other people tell us we should be wanting. Not based on what our bodies are asking for. And I think that that's where that root really aggravates me and shakes me to the core, because I really want people to understand that if they're going to make a decision like this, they have to make it from a place of embodied consent. And that's your body's consent, right? Not
yeah.
other people's consent and telling you what to do.
Right. And not the intellectual consent of, here are two terrible choices, I choose the least terrible one.
Exactly. And you know what? It really does suck. I really do have to say, because I work a lot with people with endometriosis, again, from personal experience
yeah.
as well. I think it really is terrible that those are the options we have.
Right.
And, you know, we can talk all day about how we need a cure for this and that, but we do have ancient resources at hand to help us get ourselves back in balance. And in the meantime, we can hope to try to develop something that doesn't interrupt our very sacred body processes and cycles that we need in order to stay healthy.
So the name of my business is Sacred Body. And I love, you know, the natural equation of those two words, concepts. Obviously, like, I'm not surprised you share that as well, but it's this is the work, right? To cultivate a collective view of each human being as infinitely wise and capable of healing, of knowing. And I'm just curious, what are you finding to be, and of course it varies from client to client, but what do you really draw from as far as imparting this experience of one's body as a source of wisdom, a source of information? What have you found to be like some of your most reached for tools?
Like tools to help other people. Mm-hmm. Right now I'm actually doing a series of back-to-back workshops of creating the body boundary, which I think is very important. It's number one, I think for most people that I see, and because I work a lot with, uterine conditions and conditions of uterine growth, growing outside of the uterus, a lot of these things are very symbolic of our desire to reach out for our answers, to reach out of ourselves, to reach out of our bodies, to grow out of our bodies, to not be embodied and not have a firm understanding of consent from within. Mm-hmm. And so I think that being something that I teach very regularly and have a lot of success with patients, with clients, it's very root baseline. Otherwise, a lot of understanding from the inside of what codependency means to people. And I always offer that term. It's so funny because I always end up tiptoeing around it because it was and still is something that I put a lot of energy into my own healing. And I see, I always offer my clients information when they're talking about their experiences in relating with others being harmful throughout their lives. And, I always say, like, this is one of those things that we overlook. This is one of those things that your doctor's not going to talk to you about, mm-hmm. is how you're relating outside of yourself. And those patterns need to shift in order for body patterns to shift. And so I think that, relating skills are very important, and, how we relate with ourselves, how we relate with others. And those are things that are difficult and take a long time to learn, as you know, but I think that is really where the healing touches ground.
Yes. And to give folks the tangibility of relationship, right? That's something that I know is viscerally evocative for most of us. It's something right here, right now, I can start working on it today without it being like, and it supports the understanding of this more esoteric view of the body, but you don't have to get caught up necessarily in like the internal physiological patterns changing, because you can experience this other kind of visceral pattern changing that is arguably for most people more important or more relevant, like the way that it feels to be in the world. We just do relate more outwardly, I think.
Right, and I think that in correcting those patterns of relationship, where do we start to develop safety? Because a lot of what I can't fix as an acupuncturist is, how do you feel safe in your body? Do you feel safe? Can you develop that safety? And I think that that's why I wanted more tools in order to help people achieve that for themselves, because it's really not going to be any one person that fixes you. Right. You're the person who fixes you. And that's all there is to it, because there's no, if you're going to go to an acupuncturist or a body worker or, a doctor and say, like, I need you to fix me, I need this to be fixed, mm-hmm. You're still looking outside of yourself for those answers. And that feeling of safety comes after you have developed that pattern within yourself that is clarified as in what you need and where your boundaries are and where your consent is. And I think that it sounds so basic and it sounds so easy, right? But of course it's not easy. It's a very long road, but I think it's the most important one, because what happens after we find safety? We end up finding pleasure. You know, safety comes first, then pleasure, and then boom, we've got less pain. We've got, you know, a quelling of disease. Yeah. And it sounds so cuckoo to so many people, but it's really, you know, it's really something that I found helped me, and I really just feel like that's what's going to help others.
Absolutely. The last conversation on the podcast, I was speaking with my friend who is a structural integration practitioner. And so a lot of the conversation had to do, of course, with like, when I sense that I am internally supported, I'm held together from within rather than needing to lean on substances or other people or behavior, then everything changes. And that's what I hear you saying exactly.
Oh, yeah. And this is, I had a conversation yesterday with somebody about, you know, this endometrial tissue growing outside of the uterus and not supporting its own and not staying within its container. And mm-hmm. when we're not staying in our containers, we're not grounded in our creativity, we're not grounded in our safety, then we're not going to feel like we can support ourselves. And that is, it might be a slow shift, but it is a shift that's profound, and it's something that changes all patterns of relationships. Because once you feel safety in one container, you're going to feel safety in all. And I think that that's really mm-hmm. where most of the healing happens. And, you know, we could go to EMDR every single day and try to change our relationship to, you know, memories and experiences. But moving forward, being able to navigate ourselves into safety in every other aspect that meets us in the future is, you know, that's beneficial.
It's awesome. I could have this conversation all day long. Mm-hmm. I'm really curious about your, the part of your journey leading up to when you started PT. You know, you have this very powerful visceral experience of a lump rising into your throat, and I'm sure we'll end up in the energetic correlation between pelvic floor and the throat, but I am curious what your own experience of your body up to that point was, any exposure with somatic practices, and if that was kind of like the aha moment or if it was kind of the culmination of your ongoing body process.
That was not the culmination. It was the culmination of the aha, something needs to happen here. Mm-hmm. But it took me still many years to figure out exactly what that meant for me.
Okay.
And before that time, there were a lot of relationships that were just poor quality. It was like the junk food of relationships. And you know, because we're raised in a society that says you need to kiss a lot of frogs before you find your prince. And you're just walking through life kissing frogs. And it's like, what are we doing here? and it's, I think that what really had to shift for me was, you know, I landed myself in a relationship that was so toxic for me. And I actually started from the baseline of, okay, what am I doing wrong here? Where are my relationships going awry? And that was when I decided, okay, this is what needs to shift first. My patterns of relationship need to shift with everyone else. This isn't me being empathic. This is me being codependent. This is me having, poor relationship issues based in childhood trauma. Like mm-hmm. actually owning that and taking that and saying, okay, this is how I'm going to learn how to speak with people and be with people. And I think from there, I started noticing shifts in my body. And then I started to embrace my body more. And I think that that's, you know, perhaps I try to offer them both in a package for people, mm-hmm. but it can be a lot. It really can be. And you have to have that one moment that really strikes your being and really gets you to say, oh, this is it, you know? And so for me, it was a little bit of a skewed pattern, but healing is not linear, and we're so all over the place. But yeah, for the most part, it took a little while after that to really realize, okay, there's something here. And then, of course, went to acupuncture school and learned about the channels that go right up the throat from the vagina, and I was like, ah, here we go.
I knew it. I was on to something. Yeah.
there was a physiological connection later there, which is fascinating, and I have so much gratitude for the fact that I was taken through this life and had all these little clues lined up for me, and it really does feel awesome that I can offer that to other people in a package now.
That's so amazing. Yeah, card-carrying codependent over here. Significant part of my journey in figuring out all of this. And the winding nature of healing is so real, and it's such a necessary piece to come back to and remind ourselves and hold space for whomever we're working with, whether it's, you know, friends or family members or our clients. And there's something in there that I'm finding on the pregnancy journey. It's like there's this, I mean, kind of cliched saying in healing realms of like, just when you think you've mastered something, the powers that be will offer just like the next level up of difficulty in being with this challenge. And it's in Ayurveda, it's karma, it's the karmic load. Like, what you have in you is what you have in you. These materials that you were given from the get-go are the materials that you continue to have. And I'm really proud of this analogy. I always compare it to like is it Top Chef or Iron Chef? Like, your whole life is like an episode of Iron Chef. You just get given a bunch of like crap ingredients or weird combinations of things, and you have to figure out how to make it delicious. And you like perfect your techniques as you go along, but still the ingredients are like, I wouldn't have chosen this.
No, and sometimes you just end up staying greasy, you know? Yeah. Like, well, I gotta embrace this.
This is just where it's at for me. This is what I'm working with.
Right. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about there is obviously a strong physical as well as energetic connection between the pelvic floor and the throat. Therefore, a very strong relationship between the root of our being, quite literally the root of our being, our sexuality, our reproductive capacity, and our self-expression. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, your experience of working with this, of, you know, if it's explicitly vocalization or even, you know, setting boundaries is a vocal practice.
Yeah, it is. I think it's really cool over the course of studying two different ways of doing these things, of bringing out these body boundaries and exploring the body. When you talk about acupuncture in terms of how we develop in the in utero, we develop with two beginning lines that go up the back of the body and the front of the body. So you've got the dew in the back, which is the spine, and then you've got in the front your inner yin, which is the Ren channel, so both of them kind of start to develop together. Mm. Actually, the dew, the yang, starts first, which makes sense because yang is energy, right? So your yang, you begin in this very yang way. Mm-hmm. And then your yin starts to support that yang. So if you think about how a fetus is curled over in the womb, you've got that yin growing around or within the yang, which is really beautiful because we start as form and then we become function. It's like starting with that intention. I think Liz Koch says that in her book, starting, we begin as intention, right? So we've got all this yin-yang energy. And then over time, we begin to, as we grow, we begin to stand up straight. We have the spine that's keeping us erect, and we have the yin up front. And the yin becomes the Ren channel, which is what runs from your uterus all the way up to your throat. And as a woman, this is a really important line. It's a really important connection. So in Chinese medicine, we see it in that kind of like a river flowing, like this beautiful, you know, the body as though it's a planet. It's a whole organism that's got different parts and they all interrelate, and these channels are all interconnected, but the throat and the pelvic floor are extremely close. And so what's cool about that is you can understand it in this very textbook way, but then also you've got that Western medicine model, you know, like that says if you look at the sphincter of the throat versus the sphincters down below, you've got the anal sphincter, the vagina, all these things that really have similar tissue within them. So it's so cool to think about how we have all these similarities on both ends of our bodies, because in general, we're just tubes that walk and talk, right? But of course, one end is gonna, you know, be very related to the other end. And so if we can vocalize a little bit more when it comes to our sexuality, that can be the beginning of something very special. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it comes in so many forms at me. And this is why I really appreciate having these two models to look at, because I think it's really beautiful to put them together and have them both to describe what's going on in the body.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. And I love the, again, in Ayurveda, which is my comfort zone in speaking to these concepts, there's, you know, they're both receptive and expressive openings. And the correlation between someone having difficulty eliminating, whether it's menstruation or defecation or any other kind of release, and feeling like we need to hold our tongue or hold things back or speak only when spoken to. It's like there will be a systemic expression of this withholding. Because again, if we're just tubes walking around, the function of a tube is to channel things, for things to flow. And the outward flow as well as the inward flow counts, this sort of like alternating current of our energy field. And I love, thank you for sharing that image of the fetal development. I think that's something that is palpable, accessible for most people, and really sweet. Also,
yeah, it is sweet. And I think yeah, there's so many ways you can look at this. It's also really interesting to note that holding in quality that you're talking about. If we want to dip back into how Western medicine attacks a lot of these symptoms, right, with hormonal birth control, when we cut off that system, I have to say, and I say this and I know it doesn't land well with people because just doesn't for whatever reason, but when I work with, and I don't know if this is your experience as well, when I work with a woman who is on birth control, very often she has trouble emoting. Mm-hmm. And there's a release that happens cyclically when we get our periods, you know, we're always talking about how, oh, I'm so weepy, it must be my period. And that those PMS-y symptoms, I think, are actually quite whole and beautiful, and if we can embrace them and release them, it helps us release, you know, in our cyclical bodies a little bit better. It helps us release our periods, our menstrual blood, and when we're not naturally releasing those things and we're cut off from those things, then we will potentially have some trouble relating in an emotional way. And it's been very interesting to notice those things with women. And what's even further interesting is when I work with a woman who's on hormonal birth control, very often after a few sessions, she'll say, I just kind of feel like maybe I should go off the pill. It's this deep feeling of your body wanting to circle through those emotions and cycle through that natural state of being, which I think is really beautiful.
It's really beautiful. There's something that I've definitely noticed is just what I'll call a heightened level of insecurity. And it's, take that word in all the ways that you can. And I imagine that it's a function or an expression of the endocrine system being insecure. Like, wait, what am I doing? I don't need to make that. So who's talking to who now, right? Like, internally, at that most basic biological level, there is insecurity. There has been an interruption. And even the interruption between, it's this very interesting combination of like a body numbness, or dissociation and heightened sensitivity, like cautiousness almost. That again, you know, the word insecurity works for me there too. It's a fascinating conversation and so essential, and I'm grateful that you are a big part of it and a free vocal part of it, because really this is, I think, such a huge key to our collective relational healing. Like, we have to put ourselves in the position to have a conversation. We can't solve this issue of sexual assault by conceptualizing consent and not actually practicing it at the root of ourselves and all of our relationships, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
And when you cycle it back to, you said insecurity, which I really love that, because it also relates to that codependency.
Yes.
Insecurity, you know, feeds into codependency. And then when you have insecurity in your body, you're not fully in a functioning feminine. And I think also we could look at it in a social way too. If we talk about when the pill was introduced, the expectations of women changed. Mm-hmm. And this isn't to say that women need to be back in the home and just having babies and cooking and cleaning. This is to say that we now have a choice, but we also have a responsibility to understand those choices we're making and how those choices might be putting us more in our masculine, and how can we kind of, you know, take back a little bit of what our bodies are wanting to, you know, what kind of energetics our bodies are actually wanting to be in. I think it's really important just to at least understand these things.
Yeah.
Because this is what helps us understand consent with ourselves, right? This
totally.
Is what helps us to actually create those body boundaries. So yeah, it can go small scale, microcosm, it can go big scale. I mean, all of it is so interrelated, and it fascinates me how we can talk about one and just go right to another topic, and they all make such sense. It's like a big puzzle.
Yeah, it's seamless, and the relationship between embodied consent in relationship, sexuality, what we're choosing to put in our body, who we choose to be our care providers during pregnancy, whatever is going on, whatever stage of life. I really feel like this is the root of the conversation. And having, you know, to spend just a little more time on this conversation around the feminine and what the pill specifically gave women, and this sort of the skewed understanding of feminism as like, I can act like a man, I can do everything a man can. I sort of hate that expression, everything you can do, I can do, bleeding. And it's like, but like, you shouldn't be doing everything when you're bleeding. And my own experience of real profound struggle of what is my worth, what is my value when I'm gestating a human being and I don't have a felt sense of value in that, because my orientation to value has been so wrapped up in my masculine, in productivity, in making money, in having clients, in being busy. And again, I agree with you. I don't think my value as a female in the world is to lay on my back and make babies. But it's a really big fucking deal that I can, right? Yeah. And like, our whole culture around birth and postnatal care and tending to families needs an acknowledgement that like, this is actually a profound thing that I'm doing. I deserve care. I'm not secondary. I'm not less powerful in the family. It's different work.
Exactly, yeah. And it's also, you know, that we could go down that road our whole lives just kind of ignoring that piece and not really giving it much of our attention. Much like, oh, I'm just going to take the pill forever and never have a cycle, and thank God I'll never have to have a period again, until, oh, I decided I want to have a baby now, so I'm going to go off the pill and expect to be pregnant in a few months, and if I'm not, I'm going to panic, and then I'm going to go do this very masculine thing and do in vitro. And I, you know how many people I've had quit on me during all of this work just because their doctor was like, I think we need to do in vitro, or I think we need to do, you know, like IVF, I think we need to do all this stuff. And it's like, there's a very palpable sense of needing to gain control from outside sources.
Right.
And I think that if we can conceptualize a little bit earlier in life, you know, oh, this is what's happening, like, I can understand that being on the pill is going to give me, you know, this for now. But if I can nurture this underlying feeling and sense of need for stability for myself, understanding my boundaries, understanding what it means to be a woman and to have the expectations I do of my own life, then I can develop a better sense of myself so that when I do go off the pill, I can heal a little bit better. I can get pregnant. I can have those sacred moments. And, you know, like, everyone's got their own opinion about that, but I really feel like we have to understand what we're doing.
Yes.
It's not just a cover it up and then rip it off and then we don't know what's going on, and so we got to go and, you know, do this very masculine route of getting pregnant. And, you know, I had a woman that was a mentor a little while ago who told me, you know, she was like, she was a little controversial, and she worked in fertility specifically, and she said, we're removing the humanity from pregnancy and fertility by not recognizing that this is what we're doing. And I was pretty taken back by that for a moment, and then realized, you know what, that's correct. And it's not to say that any of those things, doing any of those things, are bad.
Right.
It's the awareness that we bring into them.
That's just it. The level of consciousness, so that it really is a choice, because the impact will be totally different. And informed choice based on medical jargon is not the same as psycho-emotional informed choice.
And it's not enough. And, you know, all these chemicals we're putting in ourselves. You know, I think I read an article recently, I'm sure you probably saw it too, something about how this is the biggest human experiment, uncontrolled human experiment in the history of
mankind.
Humanity, and on women.
Of course.
We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know how what's going to happen in 30, 40 years with general fertility after pumping all these things into our bodies and then into the ecosystem.
Yeah, and that's a huge piece that has been a point of argument between me and my peers for a long time. You know, it's controversial enough to say, like, I think that maybe hormonal birth control is not the best, or at least not the only route, but also, like, this is destructive. It's destructive on a global scale. And there was something else, another article that I don't think it's a recent article, but it sort of had a resurgence in being shared, of how pelvic floor PT needs to be the new normal postpartum. And I was like, well, I'm not in disagreement with the general mood of that article, which I believe is saying, like, we need to consider that peeing your pants forever after you give birth is not normal. And so women need care postpartum. But, you know, as you and I both know, generally there's not a holistic approach when it comes to physical therapy or, you know, surgical options for women who are experiencing prolapse or endometriosis. And that, I have a friend who is a pelvic floor PT, and she's exquisite, and she won't work with people who aren't also seeing a therapist. And I'm like, yeah, because it's in a psychological, emotional issue also.
Always. It always is. And this is, This is where I run into problems, because here I am shouting at the endometriosis community, and to be honest, a lot of those people are very shut off to holistic healing. Their doctors have told them there is no cure. You will not get better. The only way to help your symptoms is to take Lupron, which shuts down your entire system, puts you in menopause.
Wow.
Or go on the pill to cover it up, or
have a hysterectomy.
And oh my God, I've seen so many women say, I've had a hysterectomy and I hate everything about it. I feel awful. My life is ruined because my doctor told me I need to have a hysterectomy. It doesn't remove any symptoms.
Right.
It really, I mean, not some, some people have relief with it, but a lot of others don't. And I honestly, you know, we don't know much about a lot of these uterine diseases because there's not a lot of understanding out there about women's pain. And we have to advocate for ourselves. And when it comes to PT, I absolutely agree with you. And that is also a statement that can catch a lot of flack, because I want to support my PT friends. I know a lot of them who are also exquisite. And the thing about it is that they're going to a Western medical school. They're working on muscles. They're talking about fascia. And that's wonderful. But, you know, where is the conversation around mental, emotional wellness? It's right. Not there. And I think that, you know, we're headed in a good direction with it, but there's still a lot to be talked about. And a lot of the things that we want to talk about, we're scared to, because it means that we're victim blaming, or it means that we're accusing women of shutting down their systems because, I don't know, that's anti-feminist or whatever. But these are things we need to talk about, because nothing is black and white.
Yeah. And I, when I find myself in conversations like this where, you know, based on the vehemence of my argument, my stance, I can understand how someone who has gone down one of these many paths we've discussed might feel judgment or shame or guilt, but arguably that shame or guilt is more coming from a place of not having been supported on that level that they needed it. And there's an educator, a writer that I really love. Her name is Mia Califf, and she wrote the book The Secret Life of Babies, which is pre and perinatal psychology. And one of her most, she wrote a follow-up book called Healing Can Happen at Any Time. And that's really the field that you and I are in, right? Like, it's not about creating this utopia where nothing antagonizing ever happens. That's not reality. That's not reality. It never has been. It can't be. It's to say that, you know, we have more options than we've set ourselves up to see. And to go back into the places alive in us that are still in that place of not having had a choice, too much too soon. Like, these are all patterns replaying, all these choices that we're making, particularly at the reproductive level, I think. And so I just want to name that as the real thrust of this conversation. Like, healing can happen at any time, but we have to be willing to enter into the conversation and look clearly at the ways that we're blinding ourselves and numbing ourselves and giving our power away.
Yes, that's it. I think you nailed it with that. It's giving your power away. And, you know, reclaiming power, like I said earlier, can come in so many forms. It can start with, you know, like in my case, it started with a simple podcast episode that I listened to that was like, why are you in this? You know, like it just reminded me that I didn't need to be in poor quality relationships. And from then, my life exploded. Or it could be, you know, for some women, going off the pill and saying, oh my God, my body's so much different. Or, but like, we all have these great little starting places, but wherever it is that feels good to you is really where you can find that seed. and just emerge it into something that makes sense to you. Where does it pull you in? What does it tell your body? And then what is your body telling you?
Mm-hmm.
And listen to what your body is telling you. Because honestly, you know, I talk a lot about boundaries, but I emphasize the boundary comes from the body. If the boundary comes from the mind, then it's a little bit more of a judgment, right? If the body boundary says, no, I don't actually want that touch. Oh, I didn't actually like the way that PT touched me or that gynecologist touched me. That's where we have to start.
Mm-hmm.
Because the body doesn't lie, right? The mind will lie to you, the mind will trick you, but the body doesn't lie. And so, you know, really stepping into that power, that's empowerment, that's self-empowerment. And I think that embodiment is an easy way to get there. So there are so many different ways we can get there, but it's really great to have those options. And I think having these conversations, you're right, is really the first step towards, oh, okay, I have other options.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really, I'm just so honored that you spent some time with me today and grateful to know that you're in the world and really excited to be connected to you and to be at the start of what I hope continues to be a collaborative relationship. And I would love for you to let our listeners know where they can find you, how they can follow you, how they can participate in your work if they happen to be in your area, if you might be traveling or doing online stuff.
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram at Sacral Spaces, sacral_spaces. My website is sacral-spaces.com. I talk a lot about all of these things that we covered, and I offer online consults in a lot of these areas, and I'm offering online classes right now, actually, specifically for uterine disorders and women suffering from them. And then I am teaching some body boundary workshops in Southern California this August and October. And yeah, I plan to just kind of keep being around and shouting my shout. And thank you for having me. I really appreciate this talk today. I think it was really eye-opening and awesome.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much. I look forward to our next conversation.
Likewise.
Thank you so much for joining us on today's episode of the Sacred Body Podcast. I look forward to joining you again. And if you want to learn more about today's episode, please visit stacyramsauer.com. You can leave your comments, share far and wide, and we'll see you next time.